23. Nanyim glanced at Yusha. He'd been working quietly on the task she had given him, entering the genetic sequences of various flora and fauna into her casa. Now he seemed to be having trouble.
What is it?
She asked.
It ceased granting me admittance, he said.
Somewhere in the distance, something mewled, and another something chattered a response. The sky was clear and the air still.
Did you try to access data forbidden to you?
Nanyim asked.
Not to my knowledge, Master Yim. I was merely attempting to enter the Freeman signatures you asked me to.
Pheromone, Nanyim corrected. It may be my security prohibitions were too broad. Let me see it.
He handed her the bulbous living memory in compliance.
No, she said, because it is not key to you. After a time, it rejects your entry.
She examined a bit further. She could reset his temporary access, but would only be forced to perform the same task again in a few hours. She could key him to the casa, but she hesitated to do so. She had stored the protocol data on Cecotan biology in it. In the wrong hands. But the prophet had proved himself useful, and only someone well-versed in the Shaper's arts could understand what they found there, much less use it. By the pattern of his rejected implants, she gathered that before being shamed, Yusha had been an intendant. Time was of the essence. With Yusha performing the simple tasks, she was making great progress with the more complex analyses.
Come here, she said. I will make you familiar to it.
That done, she was able to work for a time in peace, until Harar came, standing rather imperiously waiting for her attention. She reluctantly gave it to him. If he knew anything about shaping, and he certainly did, then he already knew she was a heretic. If she was to do her work, there was no hiding it any longer.
Yes, she said.
He gave her an uncomfortable little bow of recognition.
I was wondering where your researches were leading you, he asked, whether you've come to any new conclusions.
Always that question. What did he think conclusions were? Fruit to be pulled from a tree?
It's premature to say anything definitive, she said.
I understand that, he replied softly, but I'm hoping you will keep me apprised of new developments.
She could tell his approach pained him a bit. Harar was used to giving orders, not cajoling. After all, short of Shimra, the priests were the voice of the gods.
There have been a few developments, she allowed, though they are at the level of data rather than conclusion.
Go on, please. Anything new must be worth hearing.
But the telling costs me time, when I might be reaching those conclusions you desire.
Harar's expression flattened.
Jedi Horn tells me it may be a long while before anyone finds us. I shouldn't think the hurry is so great you can't spare a few words concerning your progress. After all, I did arrange this trip.
Yes, I've been meaning to ask you something about that, Nanyim said.
Perhaps if I answer your questions, you can answer mine, the priest said.
Nanyim leaned away from her work, forcing her tendrils to relax into a neutral posture.
When we first met, you said that you could not arrange my escape yourself for fear of being noticed.
That is true. An escape engineered by me would have failed.
Yet here you are. You came along. Won't that be noticed?
Harar seemed suddenly to relax, as if he had expected another question, a more difficult one.
I am believed to be on the Outer Rim, meditating over our conquest, where it began. A subordinate of mine took my ship there. I should not be missed. You arranged to make your abduction appear as a kidnapping as well, yes? We have both covered our trails.
I give my deception only a small chance for success, Nanyim replied.
When I return to Yuuzhan Vong's space, I fully expect I will be executed.
And yet you plan to return?
Of course. Our people must know what has been discovered here.
What Ekamval discovered has been quite effectively repressed,
Harar pointed out.
What makes you think your discoveries will fare any better?
I will find a way, Nanyim assured him.
Harar crossed his arms and looked at her with approval.
You mean what you say. You see no personal gain in this at all. I believe you may be one of the most admirable people I have ever known.
Please do not mock me.
I do not mock you,
he said, his voice suddenly a bit angry.
I am trying to express respect. If you reject it, the respect remains all the same. Each caste seeks to elevate itself over another. Each domain competes with the others. Individuals betray and murder one another in a blind, groping desire for elevation. In the galactic deeps, it nearly tore us apart. I hoped when we had a real enemy to face, we could turn that aggression outward. And so we did. But now it comes to haunt us again. It has become more than a habit. It has become how we live.
Are we not taught that competition breeds for strength?
Nenyem asked. Of course, Harar answered, but only to a point, if there is not also cooperation.
Nenyem twisted her tendrils into an ironic mode. And there is the lesson of Zonama Sikot, she said, the lesson you and I both seem to agree our people must learn.
Harar relaxed again.
Take a seat, Nenyem said. I will explain what I see here as best I can.
Harar settled into his usual cross-legged position and waited.
The diversity of species here is quite low, she began, much lower than one would expect in a natural ecosystem.
What could cause such a thing? Harar asked.
Mass extinction, for one. Some catastrophe or series of catastrophes that served to wipe out many of the species.
That's an interesting fact, but—
No, it's more than an interesting fact, she averred. The ecosystem functions as if it were fully diverse. Species have filled roles they were not designed for.
I'm not sure I entirely understand.
After any mass extinction, many ecological niches are opened, and species take advantage of these empty niches, adapting through natural selection to fill them and benefit from them. Eventually, after millennia, a ravaged ecosystem becomes healthy again and as diverse as the one that was impacted.
Isn't that what you said is occurring here? Harar asked.
No, not at all. For one thing, the extinctions here are very recent. There hasn't been enough time for the sort of adaptation I speak of to take place. For another, species here are not adapting to fill ecological niches. They remain adapted to their own niches, the ones they evolved to fill, and yet they also perform the environmental tasks of extinct species for no benefit to themselves.
She waited a moment to let him absorb that, enjoying the sudden breeze and the smell it brought, a sort of dusty golden scent.
Perhaps an example will help, she began again. There is, for instance, a plant with a kind of tubular blossom. The only possible way for it to reproduce is for an arthropod or other small creature to enter the tube of one plant and then enter that of another, carrying with it the sticky secretions of the first. The plant entices this insect with an edible fluid, nourishing to the insect, and I suspect from certain clues, important to that insect's life cycle.
That makes sense, Harar said.
Yes, except that I can find no insect that feeds on the fluid, yet I have seen them pollinated by another insect whose primary role in the ecosystem is feeding on carrion. Its life cycle from egg to nymph to adult revolves entirely around carrion. Yet they make time to enter these flower tubes with enough frequency to pollinate them, at no benefit to themselves.
Perhaps you have not yet discovered the benefit.
If this were the only example of such behavior, I might agree with you. However, I find more than half the animals I have examined play roles in this life web that are plainly unrelated to their life cycles and physical design. More interesting yet, I have discovered that each species practices some form of reproduction control. When a particular sort of moss becomes scarce due to its consumption by a kind of beetle, the beetles begin disposing of their eggs without fertilizing them. In other words, the ecosystem of this planet is homeostatic. It seeks to remain in absolute balance. It manages to do so even after enormous extinction events.
That sounds reasonable.
For a worldship, yes, because each life form is engineered to play a certain role, and the system is guided by intelligence, by Arikyam at one level and by Shapers at the next. Mutations are eliminated, as is undesirable behavior. But in the natural ecosystems I've studied from data collected in this galaxy, that's not how things normally work. Each individual organism fights to maximize the number and survivability of its own offspring. Mutations come along that have advantages and are perpetuated. Such systems are in a constant state of flux. They are not cooperative. The evidence is that this world was once like that, like a wild planet, but it is no longer.
Harar pursed his lips. You're saying that this planet has something like a Duryam, some intelligence that links all these organisms together and prompts them to perform harmoniously.
I can think of no other explanation.
Yusha, who had remained absolutely silent, suddenly spoke up. As I prophesied,
he said.
And as the Jedi said,
this is a living planet, one large organism, more than the sum of its parts, like a worldship that made itself. Don't you see what this planet can teach us? Harar, you were just decrying the competition that destroys us. It is that blind fight to ascend that leads us to treat so many of our people as shamed.
Can this be? Harar asked Nenyim. He seemed to be ignoring the prophet. We are seeing it, Nenyim replied. However, I can find no clues as to the mechanism that binds the individual life forms to one another. There are no chemical exchanges that might explain it. The flora and fauna here are not equipped with communications organs like our Vilip, or anything even remotely similar. It's the Force, Tahiri interrupted. I can feel the ties, feel a sort of constant chatter among, well, everything.
Nenyim focused on the young Jedi.
I have heard that you Jedi possess telepathy like our Vilips, she said, but the ones I've taken up, examined, showed no signs of specialized organs either.
No, of course not,
Tahiri said, her voice suddenly dark.
The Force binds everything together. Some creatures communicate through it. I can feel what Corran is thinking sometimes. With Anakin, it was even stronger, like...
She trailed off.
Never mind. You'll have to take my word for it.
And using this Force, you can impress your will upon others, yes?
Yushar said.
Yes, on the weak-minded, Tahiri replied. But I get no sense that anything here on Zonama Seacoat is being coerced into anything. It's like every living thing just agrees to do things this way.
I cannot see this Force, measure it, or test it, Nenyim said. I cannot credit it with the effect you assert.
A stone suddenly rose from the ground, floated toward Nenyim, and fell near her feet.
You may not know what it is, Tahiri said. You might not be able to see it or feel it, but you can see the results.
Nenyim conceded that with a small nod. Then a thought struck her with the force of a baton.
Assuming you are correct, she said, you are connected to this force, as no Yuuzhan Vong is, and yet, in part, you are Yuuzhan Vong. What does your force tell you this place is, to us?
I've been thinking about that a lot, the young woman replied.
I've never been able to quite put it into words until just now.
And? Harar asked. Tahiri took a deep breath.
This is where we are from, she replied.
That got even Nome Anur's attention. While the three were absorbed in the conversation, he'd been exploring Nenyim's casa and had run across some very interesting things. He'd made his little speech so as not to break character, not because he was interested, but now he stared at the young Jedi just as Harar and Nenyim did.
That's not possible, Nenyim said. You asked me what I felt, the girl said. That's it.
But didn't you say that only a few thousand years at most separate the life of this planet from Yuuzhan Vong life?
In the case of one plant only, Nenyim replied. And several thousand years ago, we were very far from here. Moreover, the Kong Kasa contains abundant data regarding the homeworld, and this is not it.
Was the homeworld like this one, living like an organism?
There are some legends, Harar began.
Whatever the legends may say, Nenyim pronounced. The facts are that the homeworld was an ecosystem of unchecked competition and predation. Would a creature like the Vuasa have evolved on a world where all of nature was in cooperation? No. The Vuasa was a vicious predator that at times multiplied so quickly it left deserts behind it. This competition among ourselves you speak of is the legacy of the homeworld.
But perhaps that was after we lost the grace of the gods, Harar said.
Nenyim blinked at him, and Nome Anur saw what he was certain was barely concealed disgust in the Shaper's expression.
In any event, the Shaper said, apparently dismissing Harar's suggestion, this conversation will not bear the fruit that further work will. We speak of things we do not have the data to support.
You asked the question, Tahiri said.
Yes, and now I'm sorry that I did. If you will all please allow me to go back to my work.
Nome Anur expected Harar to snap back, but instead the priest nodded and looked thoughtful. What in the world was going on here? Were they actually starting to believe his prophecy? Was he?
No, because he knew the source, and the source was a lie. Yes, the planet was a curiosity, but many planets in this galaxy were curiosities, and everything the others saw here was informed by his crash tale of a planet of redemption. That filter was causing them to see things in a very strange light. Would they turn against Shimra? They might. If Harar did, he might be able to muster a great deal of support from the priesthood, and with his shaper. But no. If Harar turned against Shimra, it would be to put not the prophet of the shamed ones on the Polyp throne, but himself. And he was in a better position to do it than Yusha. Especially if Yusha never left Zonama Seacoat. And there was also the chance that Harar already knew Nom Anur's true identity. He had caught more than one suspicious look from the priest.
Yusha, Nenyim said, what are you doing?
I am sorry, Master, he said. It is just that today's revelations, I must ponder them.
You've been of enough help today, Nenyim told him. In fact, I would rather be alone for a time.
In that case, I will meditate in the splendor of this world.
He left the clearing and began wandering vaguely uphill. There were other things to consider. From what he had seen in Her Kasa, Nenyim had come here in fear of Zonama Seacoat. Prepared to destroy it if necessary. She had protocols that might be useful in that, though they were obviously untried. They were in the shorthand and symbolism of the Shapers, so she probably thought he couldn't understand them. What she didn't know was that he had done quite a bit of shaping himself. As she was no ordinary Shaper, he was no ordinary executor. He was certain he could understand and use the information if he had to, though why he would want to destroy the planet he couldn't say, except that it would please Shimra. That stopped him in his tracks. It would please Shimra a lot. If into that bargain was included the deaths of Corrin Horn, who had so embarrassed the Yuuzhan Vong at Ithor, and Tahiri Vela, who had used her dual nature to betray them more than once, and a rogue priest and master shaper even now plotting against not only Shimra, but the very nature of everything Yuuzhan Vong...
Shimra might be so pleased he wouldn't have the one who delivered him these things executed, no matter what he was wanted for. So pleased that such a one might actually be elevated to a higher station than he had held before his disgrace. Musing on that, he continued up the hill.
Harar had mentioned something strange on the horizon. He stopped when he reached the summit, staring at the enormous made objects climbing into the sky, and was suddenly shaken to his very core. Harar had not spent enough time with the infidels, unlike Nom Anur, who had flown on their lifeless ships and lived in their lifeless stations. Harar would naturally not understand what he was seeing. But Nom Anur knew hyperdrive field guides when he saw them, even if they were 1,000 times larger than they should be. But then they would have to be, to move a planet. Something clicked into place for Nom Anur. He sat on a stone, listening to the sounds of the strange world for a moment. He was alone, for the first time since they had crashed. With a sigh, he released his face from the grotesque masker that hid it. His contention that it was difficult to remove had been, of course, a lie. He reached into the living pouch beneath his arm and removed the thing he had brought with him. He must have known, somehow, in the back of his mind, that it must always come to this. He stared at it, turning it over in his hands. It was a dedicated billet, linked to one other, far away. He had not used it in a very long time, since before the disaster that had led to his exile. He stroked it to life. After a moment, the face of an intendant appeared on its surface, one of his former subordinates. Even through the medium of the billet, Nom Anur could see the surprise.
"You were assumed dead," the man said. "I greet you as well, Fa Anur," he told his Kresh cousin. "You might as well be dead," Fa Anur told him. "Shimra has called for your skin. I will have to report this conversation, of course." "Of course. I want you to. In fact, I want you to see that your Philip comes before Shimra himself."
"Before Shimra?" Fa sounded incredulous.
"Yes. Send him the message that you have heard from me. Tell him I am on Zonama Seacoat and that I have found his missing shaper. He will listen to you then. When you gain an audience, present him with your Philip."
"Why should I do this for you?" Fa asked.
Consider. I have information so important that I believe I can redeem myself in the Supreme Overlord's eyes. Not only that, I believe I will be elevated for my efforts. Do you not think you will benefit as well, he who brings these tidings?
Fa'anur seemed to consider that for a moment.
I will do it, he said at last. Do it quickly, and tell no one anything I have said save those whom you must convince to grant you an audience with Shimra.
Yes, yes, Fa replied. Then the village returned to its natural state. He had probably just doomed Fa'anur, he knew. Shimra would have him killed simply for knowing the planet existed and was in the galaxy. Sacrifices had to be made, however, for the good of all, and for the good of Nome Anor.
He sealed the villa back into dormancy and its airtight container, returned it to its resting place beneath his arm, and went back down the hill.